Hello and welcome to AU to AZ. It's April the 25th here, which is Anzac Day in Australia, where we commemorate our soldiers who have gone to war. There are dawn ceremonies and things like that. And with me today, I have Rodney Turner. How are you, Rodney?
I'm well. How are you, Jennifer?
Very well. And it's not the 25th there, though, is it?
No, it's the 24th. 8:30 at night on the 24th.
One day you'll catch up.
Yes, that will be the day that I'm actually there with you.
Wow. And you say...
class.
And I say class. You say...
aims.
And I say NAPLAN. You say...
Common Core.
And I say Australian Curriculum. You say...
elementary.
And I say primary. But we both say...
learning. We'll get that one time.
I think we will.
So what have you been up to, Jennifer?
Well, I've been very busy, even though it's been holidays here. We've had 2 weeks of holidays, then Easter, of course, and then a few more days, and now today's national holiday, Anzac Day. So in my holidays, I went up to the Northern Territory and visited a colleague who used to teach at my school in Ipswich Primary School. Now she's teaching at a place called Katherine in the Northern Territory. So I went up there and visited, and she took me around to different places in the Kakadu National Park. So I saw waterfalls and swam in waterholes and saw crocodiles.
And went cruising. When you say Northern Territories,
yes,
as we're looking at Australia, is it on the east side or the west side of those things that stick up further north?
Don't know what you mean by that. No, it's in central, down the middle of Australia, I guess you'd say.
Oh.
Because we've got Western Australia on one side, we've got Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria down the other side, and then in the middle part, the top part is the Northern Territory, and the bottom part is the state called South Australia. So that one's called a territory and not a state.
Gotcha. Okay, Northern Territories. Okay, so you're up by the Arafura Sea?
Arafura.
The Arafura Sea.
Arafura Sea. I wasn't near the ocean, though, although I went to Darwin, and Darwin is on the ocean up the top there. And then about 3 hours down is a town called Katherine, and that's where I went and spent some time there. And from Katherine, you can quite easily drive to different places in the Kakadu National Park and see lots of great stuff. So it was a very educational trip because I learnt lots about our Indigenous people in Australia, which was great. And I've come back very keen to find out more about the Indigenous people who lived where we live, to find out about those people. And also while I was in there, another exciting thing was that I went and taught at my friend's school for a day.
Really?
We're crazy, us teachers, aren't we? Imagine we're on holidays and we want to go to work for a day.
Yes. Yes. You know what? I only know of teachers that do that. They go on vacation and yet they end up going teaching somewhere else. Or visiting somewhere that's just like their work.
Yeah. It's called the passion. And once you've got the passion, you can't get rid of it. So I was given the opportunity and invited to go and teach for a day at my friend's school in Katherine. And they had some iPads that were stored in a lovely cart. And I looked at the cart and thought, nice. You know, we've got dish racks. You know, dish racks you put your dishes in when you hand wash dishes?
Yeah.
We have ours stored in those with a power board and they all plug in. That's our high-tech charging units. But they had this lovely trolley that they all sat in and were charged and it locked up and everything. But the trouble with that was they all stayed in there. So they weren't being used around the school very much.
Oh, no.
So I went there and had 5 different classes for the day and focused on creating with the iPads. And we used Book Creator and they took photos of themselves and did line drawings and put their voice on and talked about themselves. So that was very exciting for them. And just to see their smiles on their faces when they heard their voices recorded, and even for them to see their pictures on the iPads, you know, it was really exciting for the kids.
Was that some of the first times that they've ever seen that?
For some of them it was, yes. And for some of them it was the first time they'd ever heard them, their voice recorded.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were very excited and didn't have a trouble with kids, you know, not being on the right thing. But it was interesting because their iPads had 350 apps on them.
Wow.
Which we used to have a couple of years ago. About 4 years ago when we first got our iPads, we would have just kept putting more and more apps on. Oh, here's another good app. Quick, put it on there. Put another one on and another one. Oh, yeah, that's good. We'll put that on. And you end up with, you know, 350 or more apps. And a lot of them really were just tap, tap, tap apps and we're babysitting. You go over and do that on the iPads while we do something else sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now I think we have 35 apps on our iPads, 35, and the rule is they most of them are ones where you actually create something in them.
Huh.
So they're not just tap-tap. We don't have any tap-tap apps anymore. You have to be able to create something, put your information in there, put you know, what you know in there and create something to present to other people and to share what you know with other people. So that's how we're basically using them.
And I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, so I was showing them all about that and they were using Dropbox for the first time and sending things to Dropbox so we could combine all their books that they made one page each and we combined it as one book. And it was a great day. In one day, yes, it went very quickly.
You did all this in one day?
In one day, yes.
And you took all day to do this?
5 different classes.
Wow.
So each class had a turn of... I had each class for 1 hour. In 1 hour, they put their picture into Book Creator. They did their line drawing, used their picture as a stencil, and then drew over the top of it. And then you can just move your picture to the side, like artwork on the page, and then have your photo on a different part of the page. And it was interesting because they all wanted to do it perfect. And I'm saying, you want your line drawing to look like art, to be an artist, like artists uh-huh. do, that look a bit abstract. And I'm trying to explain what I mean by it, but I did an example so they could see what I meant by it. So then they all did. You know, I should have just said, make your drawing look as crazy as possible. and they would have got right into it. But anyway, they did in the end. And of course, then they put their voice on talking about it and they put some text for their name on it. So they did that in 1 hour. And then I move on to the next class. We pack up and move on to the next class. So
you moved and classes didn't move to you. You moved to them.
I moved to their classes, yes. Yep, so that's how it worked for the day. So it was busy, but it was really rewarding. And did a professional development with all the teachers after school as well. So that was great. And
why am I not surprised?
And so they learnt more about using the iPads and just more about creating, getting the kids to create and not consume. Be consumers, that sort of talk. So it was a great day, ended with a wonderful dinner at a restaurant called The Big Fig. The Big Fig, it was a massive fig tree. Yeah, a really big fig tree that was huge. And you know how you do it on Facebook, you'll put in where you are.
Uh-huh.
Check in. I checked in and I looked up. Instead of the big fig, I looked up fig tree and put it in. And then someone messaged me. Someone said, I didn't know you were in Texas. Then I checked it out and I'm like, oops, it's the wrong one. No, I'm not in Texas. So that was funny. got a bit mixed up there. But anyway, and Ronnie, what have you been doing? You've been very busy as well.
I have been busy. I've been doing what's called the PARC field testing. Mm-hmm. If you were listening to our introduction, we talked about the Common Core, and PARC testing is it's a push to get online testing to change the assessment, how assessment yep. is delivered in the United States.
Yep. So it's going to go online?
Yes, and that was part of what I was field testing with yep. with my school. Well, with the school that I was supporting,
yep.
there was the English language arts, which yep. there were 3 tests for that, yep. and then there was math tests, which there were 2 parts for that.
Yep.
And so I was the technology coordinator for a fourth grade class and an eighth grade class. Sorry, eighth graders. Let me say it that way. There were three fourth graders and there were three fourth grade classes and two eighth grade classes that I worked with.
Right.
It was quite interesting because I was working with them on the online testing features. Yeah. And it was very interesting to see the differences between those that had done the practice tests, mm-hmm. as was suggested by Park, mm-hmm. and those that had not done the practice tests, as suggested. The big difference that I found is those kids that did not have a technology-based background, mm-hmm. were the ones that were having the major issues because they weren't really understanding where to click or yeah. what they could look for to yeah. navigate through the sections.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having a hard time with just some of the features. Some of the windows had some of the pages had windows that would scroll, but the other part would not. So they would scroll the whole page would move, but not just the simple section of where they were.
I know what you mean. Mm. So there were lots of logistical skills that needed to be learned.
Right.
Even not on the topic, just the actual physical use of the website. Was it a website?
It was a website. Yeah. It was a website that you logged into.
Yeah.
Specifically, and then they highly suggested that you lock it down in such a way that you could not have the kids go out onto the internet and search for answers.
Right.
So we had it was my opportunity to go in every single morning and make sure that the computers were up and running,
mm-hmm.
with their special login, and then also to make sure that the students were able to stay on the test and work on it with as minimum interruption as possible.
Gee, it's going to be really interesting because some of our NAPLAN testing is meant to be online by 2016.
Really?
So it's interesting getting these tests online because kids are going to have a much greater level of ICT savviness, aren't they?
Yes. I understand the test, but at the same time, too, isn't that just a substitution, taking a test on paper and pencil and just putting it online?
Well, I guess it instantly marks, I would assume, and collates. And that's what they're not wanting someone to sit there and manually put all the results in.
Right.
Or do they scan it? They might scan it at the moment. Does it? It'd probably be scanned, wouldn't it?
You know what? I don't know what they would do.
Hmm.
But, you know, some would disagree with me. But I think part of it, too, is just having the students to be able to perform. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And our biggest hurdle is that our end of high school exams are all handwritten and nothing is online.
Wow.
So we're pushing for teachers to use technology and to get the kids to, you know, write their essay in a word processor and use all those editing skills online or just in their Word or whatever. And then you get to year 11 and 12, which are our last 2 years, and you'll find students don't want to do it. They want to do it by hand. Because they know their exam, they're going to have to sit for 3 hours and write an essay by hand. So they want to practice at it.
Right, which makes sense.
So then the use of technology falls. And a lot of the skills aren't learned that they really need to know with really good editing, use of the software and how it can actually be a benefit when you're writing.
So I'm thinking that your big push is to get them... get the test takers, the test makers to make it an online portion rather than an offline and by hand.
Yes, definitely. There's always been great issues with how they can make it secure, how they can make the system work and not shut down, you know, those sort of things.
Uh-huh.
That's always going to be an issue, and how they can set up and have that many computers for all the kids having their exams. You know, kids can't just bring their own device and have their notes on it or whatever. You know, they're always worried about people cheating, that sort uh-huh. of thing. It's interesting because then you go to somewhere like the Netherlands and they do their assessment online and students have full use of the internet.
which I think is awesome, simply because then you create questions that are not Googleable.
That's right. The only thing they are not allowed to do, they are not allowed to message anybody else or talk online to anyone else. So they can't, you know, talk to the person over there in the other part of the room that might know something.
And I'm thinking that they have all of those channels, are watching all of those channels.
Mm.
Maybe.
Probably they'd be blocked. They'd block a lot of, so they couldn't do it, I'd say. But and I guess they should be the type of questions that aren't, fact and information, because then it would be more your opinion and how you can persuade someone to believe your opinion.
Right, which, I think that leads right into assessments for the 21st century. When you have assessments in the 21st century, they are not fact-finding or fact-recurgitating tasks or assessments. They actually should be problem-solving, collaboration, critical thinking, logical reasoning. They should be those. And so I completely understand that's where it's difficult for teachers and test makers to make tests, that you have to be much more objective in what they're trying to find. So what would be a list of really great rationales of why a certain kind of squirrel should live in a certain area than another certain type of squirrel?
Rather than what squirrel lives there.
Right. What squirrel lives there, what do they eat? I mean, those are easy. Yeah. So I think one of the things that I've really learned a lot about assessment in 21st century is that it takes a lot of people out of their comfort zones in the way that it has to be something that there's not an exactly a right or wrong answer, but there are answers that are more reasonable and there are answers that are or more effective or more even more productive, even though it may appear as though that they're not. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I mean, when you think of governments coming in, different governments coming in, leading countries, each government comes in and thinks this and does certain things, and then another government will come in and decide something else and change things. So there's no one way to do it. And you were talking about that on the interview show.
Yes, that was yes. I got to talk with the lovely EduView ladies over on the EdReach Network, and they had assessments in the 21st century show on the this past Monday, the 21st, and I had a really good time talking with them about assessments, and they made some really solid points, which I think a lot of teachers have to pay attention to. Especially if you're going to be giving your kids an opportunity for authentic learning. And that's what it's coming down to, authentic learning. Because when we start talking about problem-based learning or project-based learning, you can't have paper-pencil tasks such that they're multiple choice and they bubble or it's a short essay. It's a lot deeper than that.
Mm.
A lot deeper than that. So I will tell you this, when the EduView show does happen again, the next assessment episode, we'll be talking about different forms of assessments and how to use them in our classroom. So I'll make sure that to get those out.
Right. And we've got a link in the show notes for that EduView podcast.
Yes.
You might like to check that out and see what you were all talking about. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
And you also did the district-wide smart notebook PD.
Right. This is my fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth sessions. My fourth cycle of sessions that I've done in the district, and it's kind of interesting just to see how many people want to be able to use the technology tools that are in their classroom.
Right.
Now, I will say, some have told me, well, I heard about your class and I heard it was really easy. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to come and I thought, really? It's easy? Mm-hmm. But I think it's more of relevant to them.
And they maybe they meant it wasn't confusing.
Probably.
When they say it's easy.
Right. And that's what I'm thinking, because let me tell you, they're not exactly, we're not just doing nothing. Yeah. They are creating lessons. They are looking up and modifying. They're using them and thinking about, okay, how does this work in my classroom with what kids and what level of, what depth of knowledge do they have to have? What part of Bloom's taxonomy is it addressing? You know, they're doing all of that. But I think that I've completely hidden that under the guise of, hey, here's a tool. Here's a great tool. And let's use it for our kids. And they have absolutely enjoyed it. So.
Well, that's great, isn't it? And we were just talking a little bit before we started recording about your smart notebooks. And I was mentioning that here in Victoria, every teacher is actually able to lease and have it part subsidized by the department a laptop. So we've had our laptops now for about almost 15 years.
Wow.
And, we pay between, I think the Windows ones are much cheaper. They might be $8 or even $6 a fortnight. And the Apple Mac laptops are closer to $15 a fortnight.
Hmm. You know, I think that'd be really good for a school district to have the tools necessary for teachers to be able to do their jobs, which I think all school districts do that, but at the same time too, taking the risk and the opportunity to step out and to have additional ideas and additional options for teachers to do what they want to do in their own way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We have technicians that come into the school based on how many students you have at your school. And you're given so many hours per week, and the technicians will help people with their laptops if they have problems, and also the various different devices in the school and servers and things like that. So a school of my size, to give you an idea, my school, do you know, something exciting happened this week. Our school hit 200. We now have 201 students.
Wow.
So it's very exciting. That's the most we have ever had, but we're rising and increasing all the time because of the large building developments around, housing. But for having that many students, we have our technician come once a week for 4 hours.
And that's a lot.
So that's how much he comes. So it's not a lot, no, because, you know, when you're working on computers and you're re-imaging and you're doing things like that, it can take, although technology is meant to make things faster, sometimes doing downloads and all sorts of things like that can actually take quite some time, can't it?
Oh, definitely. You need a bigger pipe to the internet.
Yeah, you need a bigger pipe, and you need to know how to cook while you're doing other things.
Amy, housework. That's funny.
So you have it in the oven, things cooking in the oven, and while that's cooking, you go and do other things. You come back and you check on it.
So my question is this. Those people that go and they work on your computers, what kind of background do they have? Is it just IT, or do they also have instructional pedagogy techniques?
No, they don't have instructional pedagogy techniques. They are technicians, yes. The technician we have is brilliant, and he's great because he's willing to learn. He's learnt a lot on the Mac side of things as well as Windows side. He's learnt a lot to do with our iPad rollout because we were one of the first schools. He's listens really well and will, you know, basically try and do what you're wanting to do, and he'll work out a solution. You say we want this, this, and this, and he'll work out our solutions. But that's really great.
Mm. Well, that is really neat.
Yeah, or someone's projector needs the filters cleaned, and it's up too high. He'll work it out. So it's great. It's really great. Do you have that in your schools?
Yeah, we do. We have those different types of technicians. There are 17 schools. We have 17 schools, and there are five technicians.
Mm-hmm.
So each technician has three or four schools,
yep.
Which is a lot of schools.
Mm.
And I will just simply say one grade level can have more than 200 kids.
Right, yeah, big schools.
So, our schools are bigger.
Yeah, big,
Our smallest school is about 600.
Yeah.
And our largest one is about 1,200.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So it's a fairly big job for our techs to go and to take care of projectors and laptops and desktops and smart boards and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, it is a thankless job.
Yeah, it is. Well, we thank our technician and invite him to lunches and drinks and things like that. So we make sure we look after him well, because we don't want to lose him. This is funded by the government, though, so we don't pay out of our budget for this technician.
Oh,
right. So we could actually employ other technicians and pay for it ourselves, but we don't, because we tend to spend our budget money on teachers. So this is funded, what the government will fund for us. So that's quite good, isn't it?
Although that's really good. And that shows the forethought of the educational system of the government. Hey, these schools need this type of support, and we need to make sure that they have the best support that they can get.
Yep, we just hope it keeps on. When each new government comes in, you just hold fast and think, what are they going to cut?
Right.
So, but, you know, if they want schools to be working well, and, you know, the whole student management system is online. It's it's called CASES. And it links every school in Victoria in the state to the system, like you've got something like that.
Mm. Right.
And it, you know, it does all their attendance and all that sort of thing as well, all that sort of stuff. So if they want that to work, they have to make sure they've got technicians to keep it all going.
Right. So tell me a little bit about, just really quickly, about what happened to your Ultranet?
Oh, the Ultranet? Yeah. The Ultranet blew out the budget. They spent so much money on it. Basically, they wanted it to do too much. They wanted it to do absolutely everything. It did a fair bit. They didn't implement it right. They just expected teachers to be able to use the whole thing. And we had one day of professional develop on it, and they did that too early, and the whole thing crashed. So that was a bad start for it. You had little pockets where it was used or it wasn't used, you know. It also became a bit of a political football, and depending on people's political biases, whether they liked it as well.
Uh-huh.
I looked at it and just thought, what parts can we use, and use the creative part, because kids could actually log on and make their own websites, spaces they called them, but they could also make it so that other people could help collaboratively make the space, and in that space they could put all sorts of different iframes, poles, all sorts of things. So it was really powerful, that part of it. There was another assessment part as well, and we didn't really use that at my school, but my kids at my school loved it and were like, oh, we're not doing the Ultranet anymore. So now it's been let go, and people are using Google Apps for Education and trying all different sorts of things. There's also a company has bought the software, and you can pay so much per student and still have it if you want to. And they've modified it a bit, cut it down, I think. Yeah, it was a huge system, and it was just, you know, probably taking on too much. Maybe they should have done a smaller version and then built more features onto it.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted to start with everything at the start, so yeah, a bit of a debacle, budget-wise, for the government. Mm.
So my question then is, do you think there was enough professional development for the teachers to show them the proper, a better use of the Ultranet in their classrooms?
No, there wasn't enough professional development at all. So we did have Ultranet coaches, though, that went around to schools and things. So, you know, there was professional development given, but I just think because there was so much in it, it would just go over the head of a lot of teachers. Whereas if it was much smaller and you can do this with it and we all do that, and then they add another bit and, you know, we do that and gradually build on it, it may have been taken up more. Mm. But yeah, that's history now. History. Google Apps are pretty well used around the place. Many schools are now using Google Apps for education. I know the New South Wales government has brought that in for all schools. So my school's using Google Apps for education, and the kids are getting quite excited with how easy it is to share their work with their teacher. So that's starting a bit of a role.
That would be very exciting.
Yeah, so they've almost learnt their username and passwords. So that's good. If they use it enough, they get to know it. You know when they're not using it much, when you have 20 minutes of username and passwords going on.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And that's part of kindergarten.
It is, yes. Just had a thought about back to my Northern Territory trip. You know what else I did while I was up there?
What did you do?
Apart from teaching a day at McFarlane Primary School in Katherine, I met up with a couple of people that I speak to on Twitter.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I had some tweet-ups, meet-ups. So that was really great. One meet-up I had was with Jasmine Shannon, with a zero on the end. And she's at Tipperary Station in the Northern Territory, which is a cattle station that was built by a billionaire and has everything that opens and shuts in the middle of nowhere. And she has six students at the moment. So imagine that job. Yeah, and next year I think she's going to have five new kindergarten students begin. So she'll almost double the numbers next year. It's a little bit exciting. But they have everything that opens and shuts, you know, iPads in the cupboard that aren't even used because there's only six children this year. And, you know, it's swimming pool and, yeah, it's very well equipped, but in the middle of nowhere. And I don't think the Wi-Fi might have been all that good all the time, so that might be a bit of a downer. But she had a wonderful blog. And the global blog role on her blog is amazing. So I've put the link for their blog at Tipperary Station there, and people can have a look at her blog and what she's doing in the class and have a look at the blog role because there are some wonderful classes around the world. The other person who I had a meet up with...
just really quickly, yeah. I just want to let you know that some of the people on her blog roll I know and I've met with before.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Talk about a small world, huh?
A small world, yes. And Tim Wicks, who is on Twitter as Wicks Tim, had a meet up with him in Katherine, actually. He was in Katherine doing Minecraft camps. How does that sound?
Wow.
So you come along for the day and you do Minecraft all day with kids at the weekend. So he was going around and he does Minecraft camps. He's actually a teacher who's now consulting and doing other things like that. And his latest thing is that he runs Minecraft camps, sends out brochures and things, flyers to the schools and things, and kids can come at weekends and participate in Minecraft camps. He has his own server all set up and teaches them great things to do in Minecraft, and the kids have an absolute ball.
That sounds really fun.
And it was interesting, he said that some of the students that come, some of the kids that come to Minecraft, aren't always the kids who are very social, and they aren't the kids who might be playing sport, but this got them out of the house, and they actually interacted with the other kids there at the Minecraft camp. So, you know, kids were suddenly saying, well, I don't know how to do this. Will you make this sign for me? And if you do that, I'll teach you how to do this in Minecraft. So there was lots of that sort of thing happening with children who usually were the type of kids who might be by themselves and not really wanting to talk to anyone.
Huh.
So it was great.
That sounds really neat.
So it was very interesting. Yeah.
So we'll put those names of we'll put the names of those people inside of our in the show notes.
Yes, yeah, Wicks Tim and Jasmine Shannon. Our two people on Twitter that maybe you should follow.
Oh, I'm definitely going to follow them.
Or at least check out their websites and things.
Did you have anything else you wanted to share before we close up?
I did come across some interesting use of technology that our Indigenous people are taking advantage of, which is great to see. Up at the Gulf and Carpentaria, up the top of Australia, they're actually using animation to tell some of their stories.
Okay.
Which sounds great. while I was there at the McFarlane Primary School, in one of the classes, they were very keen to show me something, and, you know, they wanted to show me something, and they were on YouTube and showing me some raps that they'd done, and they'd been involved, you know, in a program that they're doing with Indigenous students in the Northern Territory, and making different raps about just healthy living and learning and coming to school and all sorts of things. So that was really interesting to see. So I'll put the YouTube link on the website for that, and you can see some of the things that they've been making. So they're starting to use multimedia to help inspire their young and to build pride for their culture, which will be great because we don't want to lose all their cultures and all their stories and even just their language.
We do not ever want to lose those different types of things.
No.
So this summer, I actually have the opportunity to go up to our Flagstaff area, which is in northern Arizona, and I will be actually presenting with the Native Innovation Incorporated company. It's a technology education. It's an educational technology company in northern Arizona. And they have a technology conference that's happening, and I was asked to come and present. So I'm going to be doing that, and I think it's going to be really interesting to compare our notes of what you learned about your Indigenous people, and then also my Indigenous people here, and the different ways that culture is affecting them, but also how we are helping them to preserve it. And to reach out to them to, I like what you said earlier, is to integrate them rather than to assimilate them.
Yes, yes. And, you know, what different ways are they using multimedia to help share about their cultures, the parts that they can share? It would be interesting to find out.
Yes, it would. Mm. Yes, it would. So
I think that just about wraps it up, doesn't it, Rodney?
It absolutely wraps it up.
Yeah, so thanks for everyone for listening. And
yes,
we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
On AU to ANZ. Bye for now.
Bye.